My name is John Cullen, and I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and curling. It's the story of Broomgate, how a single broom, yes, a broom, turned friends into foes and almost killed the 500-year-old sport of curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
Broomgate, available now.
This is a CBC podcast.
It's not very often that one show manages to take over all of my social media feeds, but Netflix's new show, Baby Reindeer, has done it. It is everywhere I look, and that is interesting to me because I find it to be a very challenging show. Today on the podcast, what makes Baby Reindeer such a surprising hit? I'm Alamin Abdul-Mahmoud, and this is Commotion. There's something that feels really satisfying about a word-of-mouth hit, right? Like, I always find myself more interested in something when I hear that people can't stop recommending it to other people, telling their friends about it. That makes me really excited about something like that. This new Netflix show from the UK came out kind of pretty quietly here in Canada. Not much of a marketing campaign. I even heard that some critics didn't really get screeners in advance, which is normally part of how you hype up a show, how you make people excited about it. But boy, has it blown up. I want you to take a listen to a bit of the trailer.
Please welcome to the stage, Don.
I'm really worried here.
You.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is my stalker. Say hello to Mark.
Don't you say that to me! Apologize to me right now!
All the wind was just taken out of my chest just even hearing that trailer now. So Baby Reindeer is about a comedian named Donnie who moves to London to start his career. He ends up being stalked by a woman. She sends countless, like we're talking about hundreds, thousands of emails a day. She spends hours at the pub that he bartends at. She starts harassing his ex-girlfriend and his parents. Richard Gadd is a creator of the show based on events that actually happened to his own life. He also stars in it. We see him reenact things that are honestly really traumatic to watch that really happened to him not that long ago. I've got two stand-up comedians here to talk about the show, James Mullinger and Ashley Ray. Welcome you all to Commotion. James, Ashley, welcome. I'm ready to do this. How are you feeling? Are you feeling ready?
Excited.
Yeah.
There's a lot to talk about the show, man. Okay, look, before we get started, I should say Baby Reindeer came out about a week ago. We will be talking about some spoiler stuff in this conversation. Also, this show deals with really sensitive subjects, including sexual assault. So if you're not up for this conversation right now, I get it. Take a pause and then come back when you are ready. James, I'm going to start with you on this one. As I mentioned, Baby Reindeer is kind of like a really rare word of mouth hit. You know, are you surprised to see how successful this show from the UK has become in the US and in Canada?
Yeah, I am. I mean, not because it's not amazing, but mainly because it kind of feels so intrinsically British. It also feels like it's not been kind of softened to be mainstream. It's a genuinely incredible piece of art that you know, thanks to the strength of the writing and the storytelling and the performances, it's kind of shined through and broken through and found this huge audience, which very rarely happens. And again, I mean, it's not since Fleabag has a show started in a tiny venue in Edinburgh and then 5 years later become a global colossal hit. So yeah. I was surprised.
I have to say, Ashley, like, I've been seeing the conversation about Baby Reindeer, and I go, well, what could possibly be so gripping about the show and the way that it does things? And then I watched it, and I did not plan on watching it all in one go. I planned on watching a couple of episodes, and then I sat down, and then I looked up, and it was done. I watched the whole thing in one go. That's how much you pulled me in. And you tweeted the show stayed with you for days. I'm feeling the same way. It's been like 2 days. I'm still kind of like, it's still in my body, you know? Let's talk about the trope that's dealing with. How does it handle the stalker trope?
I mean, it's so good in that it brings such care to Martha's story too. At the end of the day, you watch the entire show and you realize that both of these people are victim of circumstances that led them to sort of leading this relationship on and it building to where it got. And the way it just kind of unfolds that story, where just in the beginning you even kind of don't necessarily like Donnie because you think, well, he's leading her on. He should know better than this. Mm. And slowly you understand why and where he's coming from. And I think it is something that, you know, we haven't really seen when addressing sexual assault since I May Destroy You by Michaela Cole.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of my friends, we were saying this is kind of like the male version of I May Destroy You.
Yes.
In that, you know, this is not someone who's always likable. This is someone who makes mistakes and you understand that they're coming from sort of a place of just deep, deep trauma that hasn't been worked through. And by the end of it, you just feel bad for almost everyone involved, except for the director. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there isn't any sort of blame placed squarely on Martha. And that, I think, is what really has made it just stick with people.
I'm really glad you brought up I May Destroy You, because I May Destroy You is one of those shows where I finished Michaela Cole's I May Destroy You, and I thought, I just witnessed a piece of art at a level that I don't think the artist even realizes how uncomfortable is going to make people because of how vulnerable they are. Because, like, I Made a Story is the kind of show where the minute you make a judgment about a character, they make it about themselves at the same time. And I felt that the exact same thing happening as I was watching Baby Reindeer. I kind of go, yes. Hey, Donnie, you're being a bad person. And then, like, the voiceover comes over, you know, and he's like, I'm being a bad person. And I go, it just, like, I really felt the discomfort all the way through as I was watching the show. Let's set up the main character a little bit here. His name is Donnie Dunn. He's moved to London to be a comedian. He lives with his ex-girlfriend's mom. He does a brand of stand-up comedy that he calls anti-comedy, and it's not going well. Let's listen to a bit of his act.
Bang, yes. All right, cool. Now, I know what you're thinking. Venus Williams has let herself go. Oh, sorry, God, no, I said the wrong name. I said the wrong person. Sorry, it's new material. I'll just grab my notebook out and I'll do it again. Okay, let's just... Here it is. So, I know what you're thinking. Serena Williams has let herself go. Okay, cool. That didn't work. Let's move on.
James, I want to die. Just listening to that, I just want to run away. We see him navigating. He's not doing great. He's in the absolute gutter of the comedy scene in London. What rang true, you know, as you were watching this show for you?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, if you think that was hard to watch, there's actually real footage of the real Richard Gadd doing that exact joke at a pub gig called The Laughing Horse that I used to unfortunately play back in the UK.
I'm never online. Watching that. Never send that to me. I don't want it, James. I don't want it. Yeah.
It is horrifying, but it's incredibly accurate, the depiction of the UK open mic scene, and I'm sure indeed the open mic scene everywhere, in that it's an incredibly depressing place full of broken souls like ourselves at our most vulnerable, essentially, yeah. Going out, you know, doing this job that involves being booed off every night, you know, certainly seeing fights breaking out in clubs. I mean, it's a terrible time, but that said, it is an incredible place too, because it's full of people who have all chosen to put themselves through hell to create something and become something. And of course, those of us that have been lucky enough to kind of come out the other end, it's made us better comedians, obviously are better people in many ways. Mm-hmm. But it was very, very accurate. Like what he went through backstage, on stage, it's a really grimy, down and dirty experience being on the open mic scene.
I've seen plenty of TV shows, Ashley, that treat the experience of a comedian bombing on stage treat it for laughs and treat it for a reaction. Again, never like this one. Never felt suffocating to me. So, as you were watching the show, what resonated for you in terms of like the early part of your career, maybe?
Oh, absolutely! It was my early career, and I think what all comics hope for is that, you know, you do open mics, people don't necessarily like you, but you build up the show,
sure.
You get stronger with it, and then there's one person in the audience who can do something. And that's what you hope, is like this one person from the industry. If this one director sees me. And to see for this character that come true, to have that wish that every comedian just hopes, like, oh, my favorite writer just like helps me with my show. And to then have it turn into a nightmare for Donnie, it just really, for me, it did show a realistic part of this industry. And that does happen as you sort of blow up and realize as you get sort of higher up, like, oh, this is not a industry where everything is nice and safe and hunky-dory.
Yeah.
So the way it showed that while at the same time being genuinely hilarious. There are parts of the stand-up sets that are just very funny when Donnie is bombing, and that it could handle both of those tones. I mean, that is the comedian's experience.
What I appreciate about this, Ashley, is that you've perfectly set up the segue for the next segment that I want to talk about. So guys, I want to talk about, we're now really entering into spoiler territory here, just so you know. So I think we have to talk about the extraordinary and the surprising place that this show goes. James, about halfway through the series, we learn that before Donnie meets Martha, he met this powerful predatory TV writer named Darian. That's the person that Ashley was just referencing. Darian is like, hey, come to my house. We'll work on your show. We'll make it better. I'll give you lots of different opportunities. But then also Darian gives Donnie the praise that he's craving, but also gives him a lot of drugs, and he repeatedly sexually assaults him. James, how does Donnie connect his abuse from Darian to Martha's stalking? Because I think that's the trick that this show lands so masterfully. So if you could just explain that, that'd be great.
Absolutely. And Ashley put it perfectly when she said, you know, he's vulnerable. You know, he's vulnerable in his life, in his career. And I think the way in which they connect it is, you know, he's been assaulted, but also, you know, betrayed. Like lots of us, you know, after an experience like that, you know, he blames himself. Yeah. And I think Martha's affection for him makes him feel, you know, happy, validated, but also crucially, I guess he is susceptible to that attention. Yeah. Because of what he's been through, and he doesn't read the signs quite as clearly as the danger signs as he may have done had he not been through this awful experience. And as you say, like, you know, it's incredible how they make that link, and especially that these are two Edinburgh shows. You know, that he did this his initial show in 2016, Monkey See, Monkey Do, was about the assault, and then of course Baby Reindeer was about, and the way that they've blended this and the fact that he presumably therapeutically has found this connection is fascinating. And as you say, very sensitively and wonderfully handled dramatically.
It's the only episode where you don't see Martha for some time. And you sort of find yourself looking for her, waiting for her to show up, because you've been trained by the show to just expect Martha to turn up at every event. And then she doesn't, because we are entirely living this separate trauma that Richard Gadd's kind of lived through. Truly a masterful turn for the show to make. James, this show is blown up in the UK, and because it's based on this true story, it has had, we should say, real-life consequences. People have been searching for the real Martha and the real Darian. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about tabloid culture in the UK and what a comedian's responsibility is to people, real people, who show up in their work.
Yeah, I mean, the British tabloid media is absolutely brutal. And the way that they go after people is, you know, unrelenting. And there's been terrible outcomes from this kind of, you know, unrelenting approach, whereby, you know, a pediatrician having their house firebombed because the word sounds a bit like paedophile. A man was accused of murdering a young girl because he looked a bit odd, and he was splashed all over the papers as a suspect. Sure. So I mean, it's a really awful environment. So the knock-on effect of this is, of course, that there's been so much speculation on, and again, internet sleuths and so forth, trying to find the real Martha. No one's going to suggest for a minute that that his attacker deserves any sort of anonymity. In the case of Martha, I believe she has been found. She has been highlighted. The showmakers have said that, you know, they did everything they could to protect her identity. It does transpire that they do seem to have modeled Jessica Gunning's styling pretty much identically on the original Martha.
Jessica Gunning plays Martha in the show, but yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And then they've also obviously used her real, you know, they make a big deal of the fact they used her real emails, her real tweets. So it didn't take long for people to just search those words on Twitter, immediately find her handle. So now she's been exposed, and I sincerely hope that it doesn't have real life consequences for her, because clearly she does deserve to be protected, due to the fact that, as you rightly pointed out, actually, she is a victim in this as well. And she's a victim of society and its lack of support for people with what she's obviously going through.
And that's a little bit where the show goes, at least towards the end, Ashley. Like, certainly, you know, the show, unexpectedly, genuinely, I did not expect it to sort of give texture to the suffering that Martha sort of went through. And I found myself really moved by the ending. I don't want to spoil the ending here. But what's your take on the idea of the comedian's responsibility in terms of the real people that show up in their work, in a work like this? How much do you have to, you know, cut out stuff that happened to you in real life in order to protect people, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, personally, if I am talking about someone on stage who I know who is real, I do ask them, you know, is this okay? Are you comfortable with it? Someday they'll be at the show and I don't want them mad at me. but in this case, yeah, I think, you know, moving this story to TV, there is just sadly our current internet TikTok investigation culture.
Sure.
I think even if they had changed this woman's laugh, her look, the tweets, anything, people still would have found this person just because that's how people are these days. You know, they will find someone in the background of a stadium who like threw water on someone with just a baseball pick. Like, mm-hmm. I think anything they could have changed, people would have found this. So I do think it's good they've come out and said, leave her alone. But to me, it's like, did you just not get the ending of the show, that this is a cycle of abuse that's been perpetuated, that she's also a victim, and now you want to victimize her again? Like, come on, that's not what the show is asking you to do. And, you know, our final look at Martha, she's sobbing. That's, you know, and without spoiling anything,
yeah,
she's sobbing and you feel sympathy for her and what she's going through. And that I thought was the most masterful part of the show, that it got me to just fully go from fearing her, like
terrified of her,
thought she was, you know, just as bad as any villain from a horror show.
Yeah.
And by the end of it, you realize she's this woman who also, you know, was taken advantage of by a professor who probably faced similar things to Donnie. And there's this sort of maybe deeper connection between the two of them.
James, Ashley, I got to leave it there, which I feel terrible about because there's so many other things I want to talk about in the show, but we got to leave it there. So in the meantime, I got to say thank you, James, Ashley, appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
My pleasure. James Mullinger is a comedian in St. John, New Brunswick, and the author of the book Brit Happens. He's also got a couple shows in Halifax. I promise he's going to be way funnier than he was on this show today. So you should definitely go and find him in Halifax. Ashley Ray is a comedian and podcaster out in Los Angeles. She hosts the show TVSA.
Hey, I'm journalist Sam Sanders.
I'm poet Saeed Jones.
And I'm producer Zach Stafford. And we are the hosts of a podcast called Vibe Check.
On Vibe Check, we talk about everything. News, culture, and entertainment, and how it all feels.
That's right. We talk about any and everything on our show, from real life issues like grief to music and movie critiques. And that barely scratches the surface.
Yes, indeed. And it doesn't stop there. We have got a lot to say. So join our group chat, come to life. Follow and listen to Vibe Check wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Alamin Abdul-Mahmoud, and this is Commotion. Okay, let's just take a breath because we are going to shift in terms of tones and what we are going to talk about today. The rapper Toomaj Salehi has been sentenced to death in Iran. His crime, a wild charge, honestly, spreading corruption on Earth. Toomaj was arrested 2 years ago after releasing music criticizing the Iranian regime and lending his voice to the protests that followed Mahsa Amini's death. She died in police custody after she was accused of violating Iran's headscarf laws. I think you may remember that her death inspired protests around the world. So Toomaj is appealing the death sentence, but for now, he remains in jail. Journalist Samira Mohyeddin is here to talk about him and why he represents such a threat to the Iranian regime. Samira, welcome to Commotion.
Hi, Alamin. How are you?
I'm well. Listen, I'm sad that this is the first time that we've had you on the show and it's under these circumstances, but I'm glad that you're here. Let's talk about this. I want to start with one of the tracks that made him a voice of the protest movement. Let's just listen to this for a moment. اگه دست رو چشمات گذاشتی دستات خونیان خائنی اگه تریبون داری و حرفات بومیدن دوری از وطن و دوربینای ما کمسو نیستن یادت باشه کسافتای پشت ابر لو میرن اگه سرپوش گذاشتی رو قصد Samir, what is he saying there?
I mean, this song is basically about hypocrisy. He's saying, if you've seen people's oppression and you've averted your eyes, you're no better than the criminal.
Hmm.
And that's his whole MO, you know. He rails about clerical corruption, hypocrisy, the ills of his society. And a lot of people call him the Tupac of Iran. To me, he's more like the KRS-One, you know, he's almost like this sage, like oracle figure who's constantly churning the mirror and exposing not only like what the clerics do, but also his society's reaction to what the clerics do.
Yeah.
He's a really just he looms large in people's minds in and outside of the country.
That distance between the Tupac versus the KRS One, that's a significant distance. I really like the way that you just framed that there. The idea of him talking about the hypocrisy so explicitly, was he aware that he was potentially risking his life in terms of making the music that he was making?
Yeah, 100%. And he talks about that. One of his most famous quotes, and he put out this statement at the height of the Mahsa Amini protests. He said, "If I die, if I get killed, don't cry for me, because if you weren't with me in the streets, you're not allowed to grieve my death."
Hmm.
You know, so he sort of positions himself as someone who he's not just rapping, right? He is right. on the streets with the
he's
people.
He's actively involved in a... Right. Like exactly. This is the argument that he's making. What do we know about what's happened to Tumaj since he's been arrested?
So he's been arrested many times. I mean, that song that you just played, Mouse Hole, he was arrested for that. He was held for 6 months. Then he was released. Hmm. And then he was arrested again. But this latest time, he was abducted off the streets after he put out a video talking about the torture that he received while he was in prison. He had his arms broken, his legs broken. He was injected with adrenaline in his neck so that he wouldn't pass out during the torture. And then we got this sentence last week of death for, quote unquote, corrupting the earth, which is such a medieval sounding thing.
It is a medieval sounding charge, 100%. That's what comes to mind when you say corrupting the earth is a charge that he's facing for making art, right?
I mean, I hope, you know, I'm smiling because if – it's so absurd.
Yeah.
It's just such an absurd charge because it's so precarious. Also, you don't know what that even means. I mean, how do you even defend yourself against corrupting the earth?
So can we just give a bit of context here? Since the Islamic Revolution 1979, art and music have become sort of lightning rods for the regime in general. How does Tumaj sort of fit into that trajectory? Like, what would he say or do that others maybe wouldn't say or do?
I mean, the thing with Tumaj is no matter how many times they imprison him, he does it and says exactly what they tell him not to. Hmm. See, he's an artist, but he's not an artist that has ever played a concert hall in Iran or done anything. He really operates in the shadows of social media. Hmm. And the fact is that people were protesting this weekend in Iran and they were chanting, "Tumaj is a nation. Free the nation." So he's sort of very emblematic of the hopes and like what people of his generation, he's only 33, right? Mm-hmm. He sort of speaks about the hopes and the aspirations of his generation and really shakes the government to its core because they don't know what to do with him. I mean, he's sentenced to death, but as much as sort of it's alarmist and shocking, I think that's the point. They wanted to shock people with this sentence. I don't think they would hang him because hanging him would really be the undoing of this regime. And yes, they're cruel, but they're not crazy. They're very calculated in Iran. They know what they're doing with this sentence, you know, and he sort of operates when we go back to your question about the artist. He does things that artists wouldn't dare do. Right. We had that massive song, Baraye, which was sort of the anthem of the woman life freedom movement. Mm-hmm. Shervin doesn't do what Tumaj does. Shervin doesn't sort of hold the mirror up to this regime and say, "We're going to bring you down." Right. He's a lot more subtle. Tumaj gets right into your face. He's not mealy mouthed with his words. Right. He says, the streets are ours and we're going to take over.
So you're saying that, like, actually, yes, he's been sentenced. He's been sentenced to death. His lawyers are appealing that sentence. But you're saying that actually, to kill him, to hang him, would be to actually like make him so much a symbol that it would be an actual threat to the regime, and they wouldn't. It would seem unlikely that they would go that route. Is what you're saying?
Absolutely. I mean, there are other artists in prison right now. I mean, we have another rapper, Samani Yasin, who was sentenced to death but had his sentence reduced to 5 years imprisonment. There are a lot of actors went to prison during this time and other artists. But, you know, Tumaj is just too big for them to touch in this way, right? Mm. They may imprison him indefinitely, which they've done to a lot of people, but they would never kill him because to do that would really be their own undoing.
Yeah.
He's just too big.
I think sometimes in these moments when an artist can do that or wields that much power and then a government threatens them and threatens their ability to do their work, other artists sort of step up to fill that void in this space. Or are we seeing that? Are we seeing other rappers sort of step up to fill Tumaj's void right now?
I mean, there are other rappers. They don't operate within the country. Yeah. Some of them have already been imprisoned and are out on bail. So that means, you know, don't say anything. But Tumaj doesn't have those expectations of his fellow artists and stuff. He really operates as a lone wolf. And you can see it in his videos. Mm. He's often barefoot. He's speaking direct to camera. He is of a tribe in Iran called the Bakhtiari tribe, which have never been, you know, they've always operated independently. They've never been a tribe that the state has been able to control. Mm. And he really sort of looms large in that way. Like, and so this expectation that he has of society to sort of rally around, he really just points out their hypocrisy constantly.
Tamir, I've learned a lot. I really appreciate your time being here. We're going to keep following the story for sure. Thank you for your time, friend. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Alamin.
My pleasure, of course. Samira Mohyeddin is a journalist here in Toronto. Samira was speaking about the popular rapper Tumaj Salehi, who has been sentenced to death in Iran. That is it for the podcast today. Remember, you can listen to the show anytime you like, wherever you get your podcasts. We're also on Instagram at @commotioncbc. My name is Alamin Abdul Mahmoud. We'll be back tomorrow. I'll see you then.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.